This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. I'll be continuing to read from the Wisconsin Society for Ornithology quarterly journal, The Passenger Pigeons series, in the words of ornithologists past. As Mike Mossman and Sumner Madison wrote in the introduction to this series, historical perspectives are as important today to bird study and conservation as they are to other endeavors. A perspective on the past encourages wise use of land stewardship and provides a foundation for practical work on resource management problems. In an equally important sense, historical perspectives deepen our understanding of, and therefore our pleasure in, Wisconsin's wildlife and landscapes. Another purpose of this series is to demonstrate the lasting value of recording field observations. By caring enough to write about our own observations and experiences, we provide future generations a window into our world, as the ornithologists in the past have done for us. Unquote. While working on this reading, I realized that I knew little about the main river route so many generations of Native peoples and the early explorers took to travel in Wisconsin, and I found online a wonderful site that has detailed maps of the old routes, with modern maps included, so you can actually retrace their paths. It's heritageparkway.org. They have land routes and water routes mapped in detail. I hope you take a look. It's heritageparkway.org. This essay is by Mike Mossman, retired DNR biologist. We heard his essay about John Muir last week. Thank you, Mike, for these journeys into Wisconsin history. Today we will voyage in the 1830s along the main travel routes, the Fox, the Mississippi, and the Wisconsin rivers. You'll hear the term tetrao referring to grouse. This is the family name of grouse then. It's been changed today to timpanucus. And now I start reading A Tory in the Wisconsin Wilderness by Mike Mossman. In 1834, the U.S. government hired George Fenshaw, born in 1780 and died in 1866, as its first geologist. During the next 4 years, this stuffy but observant Englishman traveled throughout the eastern United States recording geological data and his frontier experiences. During the autumn of 1835, he followed the famous Fox, Wisconsin waterway from Green Bay to Prairie du Chien, and then up the Mississippi well into present-day Minnesota, returning again down the Mississippi to Illinois and beyond. In the spring of 1837, he returned to explore the booming lead mining district of southwestern Wisconsin. Fenshaw eventually published popular accounts of his travels in two books, Excursion Through the Slave States in 1844, and A Canoe Voyage Up the Minnesotor in 1847. The latter two-volume text was reprinted by the Minnesota Historical Society in 1970, and about a fourth of it relates to his travels through what is today Wisconsin. Writing for a British audience, not long after the American Revolution and the War of 1812, Fenshaw was often caustic in his descriptions of unrefined, egalitarian frontier life. Nothing is more fatal, he thought, to religion, morality, integrity, and sober manners, or more sure to accomplish the ruin of a nation, than frequent elections, universal suffrage, and perfect equality. Unquote. Yet pompous as his writing may be, they were typically humorous, often probably accurate, and, at the least, a refreshing counterpoint to the romanticized view of early America with which we are so familiar. They also described some experiences with bird life and the environment in which it thrived. When Fenshaw began his journey in 1835, Wisconsin was part of the Michigan Territory. The white population was less than 10,000, but it was beginning to grow rapidly, especially south of the Fox, Wisconsin waterway, where all lands had been ceded by various Indian tribes during the previous 6 years. The landscapes he encountered were relatively untouched by white settlement, except for occasional garrisons and traders' cabins, the villages of Navarino at the present-day site of Green Bay, and Prairie du Chien, and the Shot Tower near today's Spring Green. On 22 August, Fenshaw set off with a newly hired crew of five French-Canadian voyageurs and a fellow geologist whom he disliked and neglected to mention in his book. From Navarino, they paddled their heavily laden birch bark canoe up the Fox River, today one of the most heavily industrialized sections of river in the Midwest. The lower Fox was then pristine and wild, with formidable rapids. Quote, "As we advanced toward the rapids at Kaukauna, the river widened, and the country became strikingly beautiful. The banks, with fine trees here and there interspersed, sloping gracefully down on each side, as if the river was gliding through an amphitheater," unquote. Continuing along the west shore of Lake Winnebago, they ascended the Fox again, where the city of Oshkosh now stands, and traveled along winding channels, lakes, and marshes, which have since been flooded to form Lake Butte des Morts. Here they encountered immense quantities of Zizania aquatica, or wild rice, and a serpentine channel between lofty plants 10 feet high bearing a great crop of seed. They camped amid the marshes that third night on their journey. While the voyagers slumbered outside, Fenshaw spent much of the night singeing wings off the mosquitoes that lined his tent until, quote, "Forming determinations never to encamp in tall grass again, I at length fell asleep and became the unresisting prey of these little demons, who I found in the morning had amply revenged on my face the slaughter of their race," unquote. The next day they traveled roughly from present-day Omro to Princeton. Quote, "We pursued our way in a strong fog along the low flat banks of the river, filled with the Zizania. Further on, the country began to rise, and groups of trees to become more plentiful. I climbed a lofty tree, and the fog having cleared away, got an extensive inland view of the country, which was a perfect wilderness and nearly a dead flat, without any vestige of man or his labors. Oak, ash, and elm trees with many shrubs grew in every direction. Later on, quote, I heard the rail frequently crying and sometimes flushed them up. We stopped for the men to eat and smoke a pipe in a country not very well wooded, open oak lands with low sandy bottoms containing sedge, wild cane, and zizania. We are now about 100 miles from Green Bay, and a more perfect wilderness could not be imagined. Nothing alive to be seen but black snakes, probably northern banded water snake, red-winged blackbirds, and the plaintive quail," unquote. The next morning they approached the lake we now know as Puckaway. Quote, "At 11 a.m. there were no longer any banks to the channel, and we appeared to be going through an ancient lake grown up with reeds and zizania. About 2 p.m. we had struggled through all this tall grass and got to a lake called Apechque, or Lake of the Rushes. Here we were obliged to paddle through an immense long field of zizania growing in the water. At 5:30 we landed for the evening and were obliged to encamp in the long grass, there being nothing else near us. I had a glorious scene here at sunset, that luminary lighting up with his parting beam several thousand acres of zizania, extending at least 5 miles in one direction and 2 miles in the other, the heads of the plant all waving gently about, as we sometimes see those of an extensive wheat field do. The wild ducks concealed amongst the plants were quacking loudly. The red-winged blackbirds were issuing from them in clouds, and the nighthawks were wheeling about and screaming in every direction. Take it all together, it was one of the most rare and pleasing scenes I ever witnessed," unquote. Continuing the next day along the circuitous course of the Fox, some of which has since been obliterated by Buffalo Lake, Fenshaw was, quote, exceedingly amused with seeing the tringja, apparently a general term for sandpipers, skip nimbly from one leaf to another, floating near the shore, to pick up the insects. They seemed to have remarkably fine sport. In every direction the country was covered with long, wild grass, the buffalo that formerly used to keep it down having been driven to the other side of the Mississippi, unquote. Struggling through thick beds of wild rice, they arrived at Fort Winnebago, near today's city of Portage. Quote, Fort Winnebago is built upon an elevated piece of land, with Fox River and the rice marshes connected with it in front. To the southwest, there is a range of hills called Bonnyboo, Baraboo, which form an agreeable object. We had a very agreeable walk, during which we sprung several very large grouse, greater prairie chicken. These birds seem to flourish on this high, dry land. Unquote. From here, it took the crew just 2 days to portage to the Wisconsin, quote, a powerful black-looking stream, quote, and canoe downstream to its confluence with the Mississippi, quote, roaring out our chansons as we shot rapidly past the picturesque islands and graceful banks, unquote. On sandstone cliffs along the lower portion of this stretch, they found Indian petroglyphs, and, quote, the swallows had availed themselves of the softness of the rock by picking holes in it and building their nests there in innumerable quantities, unquote. These were apparently cliff swallows, for when Fenshaw revisited the shot tower at today's Tower Hill State Park in 1837, he found that, quote, the colony of swallows, too, which I had observed in 1835, had increased greatly, continuing to make holes in the face of the soft sandstone with their beaks and filling them with nests of clay, having small orifices. In some instances, the nests were built upon the face of the vertical escarpment. Many hundreds of them had established themselves in the rock. Some of the nests had eggs, and from others, young birds were peeping out. It was truly a very pretty sight, unquote. After spending 2 days at the pioneer village of Prairie du Chien, they paddled northward against the current of the Mississippi. On 4 September, they camped south of La Crosse, where Fenshaw scaled a river bluff to view the Mississippi. Quote, I seemed to look down upon an immense forest growing upon innumerable islands, among which various streams were gliding. Some of the islands were so extensive as to contain ponds of considerable extent and large areas of the Zizania, already frequented by the wild fowl, which had begun to arrive from the north in immense quantities. These scenes never satiate the eye and the mind, and I availed myself of every opportunity when we landed to renew the enjoyment of them. Whilst wandering about there, I sprung 2 beautiful broods of tetrao, sharp-tailed grouse, which immediately took to the trees. I could have shot several of them, but had not my gun with me, unquote. I will stop here and next week finish this essay, A Tory in the Wisconsin Wilderness, an English geologist canoeing our waterways in the 1830s. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Thank you for listening.